to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Cece.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Cece, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 29th, 2014. Thank you. Yeah. So I have 22 months. I want to thank Bill H. for asking me to speak. I know he couldn't be here, but it's a huge honor for me to be up here. It's the first time I've done a big speaker meeting like this. So, and also, I want to congratulate everyone who got a chip today. That's so exciting, you know, a day to however many decades, like we're all here for the same reason. So that's just really cool. I found a part in the big book to start off with, just that kind of really spoke to me. It's an oar about alcoholism. It says, to be gravely affected, one does not necessarily have to drink a long time, nor take the quantity some of us have. This is particularly true of women. Potential female alcoholics often turn into the real thing and are gone beyond recall in a few years. Certain drinkers who would be greatly insulted if called alcoholics are astonished at their inability to stop. And that definitely describes me for sure. I'm not a person who grew up around a lot of alcohol. My mom drank like a wine cooler every 6 months or something. I don't know, like not that much. My dad drank some beer. I did have a lot of alcoholism in my family, especially my grandparents. I remember probably when I was about 9, my mom started telling me stories about my grandma, about when she was a little girl, and how when my grandma drank, she was really mad and she was really crazy, and she would like forget weeks at a time, and she would like leave and come back, and but it was never something that we talked about. I always knew my grandma as being sober, but she unfortunately never came into the program. She was dry, which was cool for me, you know, to have a grandma who didn't drink, but she never got to kind of come in here and like get rid of that guilt and like really be free, like I've had the opportunity to do. So I also had an uncle who was an alcoholic. He was about 17 when I was born, so I really kind of saw that progression of like when he first started. And he was someone in my family who I just thought was like lazy and didn't want to get sober. He was someone who like always lived at my grandparents' house. He'd never hold down a job. And that's in my head, it was like that's what an alcoholic is, right? Someone who can't live on their own and can't have a job and is just like an embarrassment to the family. And I remember my mom saying, like, this could happen to you. And I just thought, like, no, I would never let that happen to me. You know, I had this idea that I didn't know it was a control thing, you know. I thought, like, no, I'm not going to do that. No way. So that's how I went. That's kind of what my first exposure to it was. For me, really early on, I was pretty good at school, like, starting from, like, kindergarten. And so that's kind of where my identity came from, was, like, I'm good at school. Cece, good at school. And so that was like my life. And I was the oldest child in my family, the oldest of three girls. And I just kind of got that like perfectionist attitude from a kind of a young age. My expectations of myself were pretty high. And I just wanted to be the best at everything. And I had a good childhood. And then my parents got divorced. I was about 12. And we lived in this middle of nowhere town. It's called Phelan. It's in Southern California. I'm always like surprised when someone else has heard of it because no one ever has. Somebody in Hesperia? Yes, by Hesperia. Okay, cool. Okay, you know then. Nowhere. There's like one stoplight in the town and like one high school. It's like really small. So when my parents got divorced, my mom was like, I'm not staying in this small town. I got to get out of here. And she went online to see where teachers made the most in California, and it was in Fresno. So we moved to Fresno. And and we didn't know anything really about it. But we came up here, and suddenly I'm in this school, in this middle school, where there's like three times as many kids as was in my K-8 school back in Phelan. There's like 2,000 kids in just in like two grades of middle school. And so like the first like day or two, I'm not really making any friends, and I'm real all or nothing. Like day two, I haven't made any friends, and then I'm like, I'm not going to make any friends forever. Like this is my life now because it's been 2 days. And so I start to think, like, how am I going to get out of here? So now it's like school isn't that cool. Like home is good, but it's kind of stressful. And I just think, like, how do I get out of this town that I don't really know, that I don't really care about? And to me, the answer is, like, college. So I'm going to do all that I can to go to college. And for 5 years, I'm obsessed with college. And I think for me, it started for me as workaholism, like I said, of like what progressed into alcoholism. Because I'm a student who like only AP and honors classes, cheerleading all 4 years, theater. I got a job, not because I needed money, but so that I could put it on my college application. I sang in the church choir, Catholic church choir every Sunday, and I went to my mom's school and I started a cheer team there. And like, I was just so busy all the time. And what I know now is that I really hated like being alone with myself. It like really made me uncomfortable, and I had to like find something to make me busy all the time. So that's what I did. What happened for me, and I didn't drink in high school. I didn't really, I felt like people who drink are crazy, right? They're the bad kids, and I'm a good kid, so I'm not going to drink or like do anything bad. So it gets to the point where it's my senior year. I only apply to private Catholic schools because I get this ego. Oh, this is the other thing. I start to get this ego, right? Because I'm better than everyone because I'm smart. So I apply to only Catholic private schools, and my backup school is a school that costs $80,000 a year, and my mom sits me down and she says, I can't afford to send you to any of these schools. And that was when I basically was like, well, what's everyone been doing that's been so much fun? Like, maybe I'll try this alcohol stuff. And I remember I was at my house. My mom was out of town, and I had invited some friends over. And like I said, my mom didn't really drink, so I knew that she wouldn't really notice. So my friend made me like a screwdriver. Like, and I remember really clearly him sitting next to me. He's going, chug, chug, chug. And I'm like chugging this like big mug full of vodka and orange juice. And like the relief was like immediate. Like I felt calm for the first time. And it's like that stress went away. Like I could breathe. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I have friends and I'm cool. And like everything's going to be okay. And the next day, my friends were talking about something there, and they were planning to go shoplift. And I was like, cool, I want to try that. Let's go shoplifting. And I smoked a cigarette. And it was like, I was going to just, who cares anymore about anything? And so I went from workaholism to shoplifting. That became my next addiction. Because it was one of those things that, like, I got the idea in my head and it wouldn't go away until I did it. And so I experienced the same sensation with alcohol later on. So I ended up at City College, which in my head was, like I said, I have this huge ego. I think City College is for, like, dummies. So I'm at City College, and I'm smarter than everyone, right? So I don't have to go all the time. And then I'm, like, starting to not pass classes. And I'm thinking, like, I'm always this, at this point, I'm, like, this egomaniac with the inferiority complex. Like, I really don't think that much of myself, but I'm smarter than everyone. Like, it goes back and forth really quickly. And so all of a sudden, like, school isn't, like, my safe spot anymore. And, like, this whole part of my identity, like, that's all I had, all of a sudden that's kind of gone. And I was pretty lost. And so at this is where I start, like, drinking comes into my story. Other substances come into my story. And I'm about 19 now, 18, 19, and I find this group of friends, and, like, we steal bottles from the grocery store. We go in and we shoplift them, and then we drink, and all of a sudden it's like I have a group of friends, and I don't, like, school is whatever, like, this is my life now, and, like, I just love that feeling. And, you know, for me it was gradual. It wasn't, like, every day, but I can tell you that, like, I looked forward to that next drink, even though it was, like, a week away, like, that was my life. And it was, you know, fun at the time, I thought. But and then my home life was a little funny. My now stepdad had moved in, and he was an ex-police officer. And so I could kind of fool my mom, but I really couldn't fool him. And that caused a lot of trouble. Home wasn't fun anymore. School wasn't really fun anymore. So all that's fun is, like, my drinking and my using. And so I move out when I'm 20, and I start dating this boy, and our big plan is that we're going to grow marijuana and we're going to make all this money, right? Yeah. It's going to pay for our student loan, and we're going to get cars, and it's, like, going to pay our rent. Like, we have these crazy ideas. And so we start squatting in this house in North Fresno, which is, like, a really nice, like, gated community, and, like, one room is just, like, all marijuana plants, and we're, like, the fun place to hang out. And then we turn 21, and like there's always like a handle in our freezer, and we're the fun place to be. But pretty much for me, like as I turn 21, I start to realize that like alcohol affects me differently than it affects the people around me, and I can't put my finger on it yet. Like I don't really know why. I just kind of think like, oh gee, I need to be more aware. I need to count my drinks or whatever I need to do. But like I can tell that like other people have this ability to say, okay, I'm drunk now, so I'm going to stop drinking, and that never happens for me. Like I never get that like, okay, I'm where I want to be. Like I always am going to excess. I'm always like passing out, blacking out. I used to wake up in the middle of the night, like to go to the bathroom, and I just like walk out to the kitchen and take a shot and go back to bed. And it didn't even cross my mind that that was weird. Like that was just normal for me. I work at a restaurant, so it's pretty easy to party and work at a restaurant. I didn't really have any problems at work, thank goodness, but I did start doing stuff like I needed to buy something to drink before I got to work. And I'm starting to hide stuff, empty containers. And my boyfriend finds them, and he's not real big on confrontation, so what he'll do is he'll like take the empty containers and he'll put them somewhere where he knows that I'll see them. So then it's like, he's like, oh, I know you saw the bottles that I saw, and like, it's like a weird situation. And I'm able to explain it away. I'm able to say like, oh gosh, you know, like, sorry, I don't know why. And he like knows that I'm sincere, but like at no point are in either of us thinking like I'm an alcoholic, not yet, you know. Life kind of just goes on that way. I tried all the stuff that Brandon was reading and more about alcoholism, the like, I'm just going to drink beer now, or I'm just going to drink red wine now, or I'm not going to drink alone, like I'm really going to try and not, but like more and more I'm drinking alone. Pretty much my entire drinking career is mostly me drinking alone. And it starts to become a trigger, like whenever I have a moment to drink, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, it's here, I can drink and no one's going to know. And like I said, still doesn't cross my mind that like this is something I need to do something about though. Like, and it gets to the point where, like, my boyfriend takes a shower in the morning, and I'm seeing how many shots I can take, or he's in the bathroom, and I run and I take a shot, and that's just, like, is my life, kind of. So eventually we get kicked out of squatting at that house, and we go to another house and we start the whole thing up again. And the growing was really rough because it made it to where we couldn't really invite anyone over because we're always afraid we're going to get caught, right? And it's not really making us the money that we want us to make it, but we're kind of like ignoring that part of it, and we're like dedicated to this life. And it starts to happen more and more that I'm getting caught, and it's not fun because, you know, I'm trying to like lay low, I'm trying to like have people leave me alone. And I start to create this like other persona so people will back off. I'm like, yes, everything is so happy and I'm so great. I have like resting nice face instead of like resting bitch face. Like I'm always happy, and that's like kind of the facade I have so that people will just, you know, think that I'm fine. Speaking of, I found another quote that stuck out. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he does not deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. So for me, like, you know, as I said, gradually it gets worse. Like, we know the story. Gradually it gets worse. So it's fine for me to drink every day. I really have never had a problem with drinking in the morning. Like, this stuff has never fazed me. I remember once I had this bottle of, or we had this bottle of Jack Daniels my boyfriend's dad had left. And, like, throughout the week, I'm drinking it, and then I'm pouring tea back in so that he can't tell. And then eventually he takes a drink of it, and it's tea, and, like, we fight over that. Or I go through this where, like, I have a funnel on me all the time, because what happens is, like, hey, we have a glass of wine or a bottle of wine. I'm going to just have a glass, right? I can have a glass of wine. And then it's, like, you know, the craving starts. So then I'm like more and more and more. Then it's gone. And then I'm like, oh shoot, I have to find this bottle of wine. So then I'm like driving to different stores trying to find this bottle of wine, or like funneling amounts in so that the amounts are matched up correctly. This is like my whole life, replacing stuff that I'm drinking because I don't really intend to drink all of it. I just like have no control. And then I start to buy like half pints of liquor because I know by now that whatever I buy, I'm going to drink all of it. But I don't want to die, so I buy small amounts. I'm buying half pints, but I'm buying them like throughout the day, and like all over the place. And I'm like hiding, you know, I have hiding places all over, and I'm pretty typical, you know, I'm pretty typical. So at one point, I think it was 2013, I went to Fresno State Health Office. I had managed to transfer to Fresno State. Don't know how. It took me like 5 years to do the, you know, 2 years of transfer units, because that's what happens when you're drunk every day. And so I go to Fresno State, and I'm like, after this like binge, I'm like crying, and there's snot coming down my face, and I'm sitting there with the counselor, and I'm telling her like, I can't stop drinking, I need help. And she says, maybe you should try AA. And I was like, no, I'm not that bad. Like, I don't need AA yet. Like, just help me, you know. So I was kind of sad. But so eventually I make it into AA. My mom takes me my first time. It was Mother's Day 2013. My family hadn't been able to find me basically for like the last 4 days because I was out drinking. And so I didn't want to tell them that I knew that I had a drinking problem, but I just knew that I had to have some kind of explanation for like where I'd been. So so I told my mom on Mother's Day that I had a drinking problem. And my mom says, great, now you never drink again. Yay! And I was like, oh no, like I want to drink right now. It was like, but she did get me to a meeting the next day, and that was really cool. You know, I thought AA was going to be really depressing and sad. I was so miserable. I was still in withdrawals, basically. Like, I was having, you know, these really long hangovers, which I discovered was like I was withdrawing. But I went in, and everyone was, like, happy and smiling and shaking hands. It was a women's meeting. I remember this woman shared that she, like, finally wasn't having those, like, wake up at 3 a.m., like, in cold shakes or hot, cold sweats or whatever. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, how nice would it be if I could be there? Because that's where I was. I was, like, waking up every morning with the sweats, and I was shaking all day. And you know, I now know that I was just dependent on alcohol, like, physically. And unfortunately, as we know, or, you know, part of my story, I didn't, like, walk in AA and then get sober. Like I said, that was in 2013. It was a whole nother year until my sobriety date. And part of that for me, and I don't say this to talk extra, like, about drugs randomly, but just because I know there are other people dealing with this, I did not believe that marijuana was a drug, and I was not going to stop smoking it. No one would convince me. So that really kept me out for that next year, because I came in and I said, drinking is my problem, so I'm going to try and not drink, but this is just something I do every day, and I'm still going to do that. And I remember eventually, like a couple months later, I tried to get a sponsor, and I told her the truth, and she didn't want to work with me. She said, you know, when you stop selling weed, give me a call, but until then, like, I don't want to work with you. And so I said, oh my gosh, you know, AA, these people don't want to help me. And I eventually did amends to that woman, because I did a lot of gossiping and trashing her, because that's what we do. But so I would like start to kind of be honest, but then I got that response, so then I came back in, and I started to do stuff like, you know, I'm going to help with this musical, because then I'll be working with kids, and I'll have something to do at night, and that's going to stop me from drinking, you know. But and then it doesn't, and then I'm drinking, and I'm being with these kids on the play, and eventually I lie and say that, like, I need back surgery, and I leave the play, because I don't, you know, I'm not someone who can, like, who can commit. I'm not someone who can, like, keep a doctor's appointment. Like, I really don't have any faith in myself of, like, being anywhere, like, on time, or, like, I hated making appointments because I just really didn't know, like, what was going to happen that day. I was so inconsistent. So, yeah, I was just pretty much slowly dying. I would go to my therapist, and I got a therapist when I started going to meetings, and, like, it was, like, 1 hour a week where I could be honest with someone, and then the whole rest of my life was just, like, lies. And I used to think, like, that I wasted all that time because I didn't get sober right away. But now I know, like, it wasn't a waste of time. Like, I learned things. It's just, like, everyone needs what they need, you know? Like, I wasn't ready when I first came in. Like, I thought I didn't even want to stop drinking, really, when I came in. I just wanted, like, some help to, like, be normal and to, like, drink normal. And, you know, I was 23. I didn't expect to not drink ever again. That was, like, so not on my radar. But so I needed that like year of beating to finally get there. I started going to this outpatient program, and actually the first time I went in, my therapist says, like, go to an outpatient program and check it out. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to check it out. So I go. What I now know is what he did an assessment, and he said, yes, you're an alcoholic. Go, you come back tomorrow. And I was like, oh, like, I don't want to come back. Like, I just wanted to. So I never came back. And then like a couple months later, then I'm back in, and but I'm still lying about smoking weed, even though I'm getting drug tested. It's all bad. I'm just like still in a lot of denial, and not really like being fully honest yet. I did start to work with a sponsor and like start to do some steps at that time. And then I remember saying, because I ended up relapsing, I drank again after 6 weeks. But like I said, I wasn't sober. I just wasn't drinking. But for me, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. But so I relapsed, I drank, and I did all this stuff, and I called them, and I told my outpatient, and they said, you can't come back until you can do all day. And I was like, well, I have to finish the semester of school, so see you later. And then I failed all those classes. So then I went back, and I was getting confronted a lot more. And, you know, for me, as an alcoholic, I don't like to be confronted at all. So I remember this one day, I'm in my outpatient program, and at lunch, I walk across the street, and I get this little, like, individual thing of wine. And just having it, like, makes me feel better. Like, I haven't even drank it yet, but, like, just the fact that I have it, and I'll have it for later, I'm like, okay, like, I'm okay now. And then I remember I went home, I drank it, and then I decided, all right, I'm going out. Like, I'm going to go to the store. And at this time, I'm riding my bike, and I'm like, I don't want to go the one across the street because I go there all the time, right? Because I like to switch up where I go so that the same guy doesn't see me. I don't know why I care. So I get on my bike, and I'm riding my bike to this other liquor store, and I have a purse with me, and I go to cross the street. My purse falls down and gets stuck in my bike spokes, and I flip up over the top of my bike, and I, like, fall on my face in the middle of the street. And this woman sees me, and she pulls over, and she, like, helps me. She's, like, a nurse. She makes sure my arm isn't broken. She, like, gets me home, and I wrap up my arm, and I walk to the liquor store that's closer that I didn't go to the first time. And that was the last, like, my last out. That was June of 2014, the beginning of June, and for the whole rest of that month, I was drinking every day. I found out in rehab, you know, I had said, I'm getting these really bad hangovers where I can't even drink water the next day. Like, I drink water the next day, and I'm just throwing it up. And she says, yeah, but you can drink alcohol, right? And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, if you drink alcohol, then, like, you feel better. And I was like, I did not know that yet. So when I went back out for the last time, I was, like, around the clock, because, like, you wake up and you feel bad in the morning, you keep drinking, right? And then basically you get drunk again, and you don't have to go through withdrawals. But so that was my last month. It was not good. You know, I was pretty spiritually dead. And I just had no control at all. So finally I came back in. I did not intend for that day that I stopped drinking to be my sobriety date. But I decided to go back to my outpatient, and they told me that in order to come back, I had to move and go into sober living because I hadn't been able to stay sober where I was. And immediately I'd like burst into tears. I'm like, I'm not in good shape. And I start crying, and he says, I'll give you a minute to think about it. And he goes to leave, and I stopped him. I said, I don't need a minute to think about it. If you're telling me that's what I have to do, then that's what I have to do. Like, I can't spend another day out there. And for like, that is the moment that I surrendered. And from that day, I have not, you know, had anything to drink or any substance at all. I got in touch with my sponsor, and I started working the steps right away, and I'm all in. And for me, like, I had to change everything in my life. I ended up moving in with my grandfather, who is sober. He actually is not an alcoholic, but he hasn't drank in like 25 years. It's really big because of my grandma and my uncle. He doesn't drink. So I moved in with him. I changed, you know, I cut my hair, I changed my ringtone, like everything had to go. Like, I had to change everything in my life. I started going to meetings every day. Part that I skipped over, yeah, it's plenty of time. Okay, so before I got sober, sorry to go back, you know, chronologically, but so with my grandma and my uncle, April 13th, 2012, my uncle actually shot my grandmother and she died. And then he shot a neighbor, and then he like went to a church and shot at the crucifix. So like we had this insane, and then he ended up dying also. The police shot him when they got onto the scene. So we like had this really insane, violent thing happen with that, you know, with alcoholism in my family. And so when I got sober, or right before I really got sober, I went to my grandfather because I knew that my uncle had gone to AA meetings. And so I was like, where did Uncle Chris go to meetings? And he said he went to see our fellowship, which is in Clovis, right by where I live. And so I went to that fellowship and I said, you know, here's my name, here's the story, like here's my uncle, like who knew, I just want to know who knew him. And I met people who knew my uncle, and I met a guy who told me, you know, start going to these 6:30 a.m. meetings. Those are the meetings your uncle went to. And so I go to those meetings. I meet his sponsor. And I meet people who knew him, and like that was a huge healing thing for me, because my uncle was always like this villain of my family. Like even before all the drama and the death, like he was this person who I just thought, like I said, was like lazy and didn't want to get it. I knew he was in and out of AA, and then like for me, like for it to come full circle, and then for me to be in the rooms and like to be with people who knew him, it really just made me realize that like I'm no different from him. I'm no different from anybody, you know. I don't know why, like, I got to experience the miracle and, you know, he didn't. And even my grandma, like I said, she was sober, but she still had a lot of, like, you know, compulsive tendency. She felt guilty her whole life. She thought my uncle being an alcoholic was her fault. Like, she never got that release of, like, what we get in here when we get to come in and share and figure out that there are other people like us. So that was a really big deal for me early in sobriety. Like, moving in with my grandpa was really crazy. I'd still lived with the same boyfriend this whole time, and so my grandpa was really nervous about me having any money, because that was one of my uncle's triggers. Whenever he could, like, rub 2 cents together, he was, like, out trying to get alcohol. So my grandpa took all my money away, and I had to, like, ask, like, hey, can I have $5 to go to Starbucks? And I'd, like, bring him back the change, and he drove me everywhere. Like, he would drive me every morning to the meetings, and then he'd drive me to rehab, and so it was really hard, you know, to, like, it was really humbling. I had to go back to the beginning, because I'd had a job for like 4 years already and been out on my own. I was 24 when I got sober, so it was a good time to start over. I mean, I really thought I had all these friends, you know, but they were just like using buddies, I guess, because they all pretty much peaced out after I got sober. I really don't see a lot of them anymore, but yeah, so I started to do that. I started to work the steps. I got kind of lucky because I had a deadline to do my fifth, because I had this trip to go see my dad. And I remember saying to my sponsor, like, it was in November, and I was like, hey, wouldn't that be cool if I could do amends to my dad when I go see him? And she goes, how about you do amends to everybody, and then you go do amends to your dad? And I was like, oh, no. So then I had this, like, deadline to get my fifth step done. So I think I got sober in June. I was doing amends by November, and for me, just to backtrack a little, again, like, for me, the God stuff was really hard. I was an atheist when I came in, and I saw the God stuff on the wall, and I just really wanted to run away, but what kept me was the, as you understand him, so I was like, all right, there's some wiggle room, maybe, you know, but it was really hard, and every time someone said God in a meeting, I, like, cringed. I was just like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know about these people, right? And I didn't want to get a sponsor because I didn't want to get converted, right? So it really held me back, though. It held me back for a long time. And when I finally did, like, get a sponsor and, like, okay, maybe someone knows more than I do, because obviously, like, I'm dying. She gave me work that helped me define my own understanding. I think that's, like, the amazing part of this program is, like, it doesn't have to be what anyone else believes. It's just what you believe. We did an exercise where we do, like, she did with me the dictionary definitions, and then I meditated, I did my own definitions, and it's like you get to create your own higher power. Like, you know, for me, it's just like a universal connection that we all have. It's the freaking sun and the moon and the ocean. Like, it's everything, you know, it's all of us. It's what I hear in meetings. Like, it took a long time for me that to come through to me. I was really stubborn, and but now it's really amazing to kind of be on the other side of that, and that's just from working with my sponsor. So I got to do amends, and that was amazing. I had a lot of wreckage, and even like my fourth step, it was like pages, right? Like, my resentments are pages and pages, and then I'm getting down to amends, and my list of lies and dishonesty is like pages and pages, and I'm realizing that, like, all the stuff I've been blaming this on has always been me, you know, that I'm a selfish, self-centered person when I'm in my disease, and that if you're in the way of my alcohol, then I'm going to go right over you. I don't care about you. So to do amends, especially with my family, was really cool. My stepdad, who I thought amends were going to be horrible, I thought when I said, "Is there anything else I missed?" he was going to say, "Yes, you did," and he was going to give me the list of all the things I missed. But it wasn't like that at all. He was like, "What can I do to make our relationship better?" And that was really healing. I did amends with my boyfriend, and I learned with the amends with my stepdad to like stop having expectations, because my expectations were so bad, and then it was nothing like my expectations. So that was a really cool lesson for me, to be like, this isn't going to be anything that you think, so just stop and just like let God work, right? So I did amends with my boyfriend. I like fully expected him to leave me, and he didn't. He was like amazing, you know, gave me a hug. I was like, is that it? So that was really cool. And then eventually I started to get involved in service work. We have the Fresno County Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, and I joined their committee and got a part of that. We do big conferences every year, the like All California Young People's Conference. We just had it last 2 weekends ago, and it's just really amazing to like have so many people who have the same goals. I mean, this is cool, but like double this by like, I don't know, 10, 15 times, you know, and it's like so many people on one space. I remember also when I first got sober, I went to this little conference and they were talking about financial amends. And if you remember, my story had a lot of shoplifting. And I remember asking the speaker, I had like 40 days, and I said, you know, what, you know, these financial amends are kind of making me nervous. Like, I did all the shoplifting. What am I going to have to do for that? And he was like, well, I don't want to tell you this because I know that you're pretty new, but like, you're going to have to go back to those places and you're going to have to make amends. And I did end up doing some financial amends in sobriety. And that I was for sure thought like I was going to get arrested, right? I had these like expectations. But at this point, I have enough of like listening to my sponsor and like knowing that the book hasn't failed me yet, so that I like went back into stores. I brought merchandise, like bags full of clothes, back into JCPenney. Like, can I see to a manager? And I gave her my spiel. I said, I'm in a 12-step program, you know, it's about living a program of honesty. I did the shoplifting, here's this merchandise. And she was like, good luck on your program. Wow, like, you're being so honest. And I said, also, I have some cardigans that I can't bring back because I've worn them too much, so can I pay for them? Will you ring me up for those? And I walked out of there and I felt like this freedom, it's like hard to describe. Like, I was like skipping on clouds. Like, I called my sponsor and I was like, it went so good. And she was like, I told you it would. And I was like, I didn't believe you. and it was just, it's so incredible, like the freedom that I have today, like the freedom for myself, you know. And I did end up shoplifting again, and did financial amends again, and it's just like a, you know, works in progress, and I find that there are a lot of different ways for me to check out that aren't alcohol, so I really have to make sure that I'm spiritually fit so that I can be relieved of that. Most recently, I have a sponsee that I'm working with, and that's incredible, you know, to get to pass this along. It's just crazy. So what else? No, a little bit more time. You know, I've done a lot of work on, like, I wasn't able to ever, like, self-soothe before. I'm someone who always beats myself up, and I'm the first one to, like, you know, tell you what a big screw-up I am. I used to say when I got into rehab, I was like, I'm meaner to myself than I would ever be to anyone else. Like, because everyone else, I'm really nice, but to me, I'm really hard on myself and really mean. And so, like, that has been really cool to get to learn to not to do that. Like, to have that acceptance and that serenity, to not have those expectations. It says on the... In 417, the acceptance page or whatever, he says, my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. So, like, the higher expectations, the lower your serenity is going to be. And I definitely find that to be true. You know, when I was in rehab, when I went for the last time and I finally got sober, I learned so much about myself. Like, and for me, that's really what I needed, because I needed the, like, here's what your brain does, like, here's the logic part of it. I needed the accountability and, like, the group counseling and that stuff every day. That was really important to me. And I ended up doing, because I'd been in and out of that program so many times, they ended up giving me a first step packet that was like 40 pages long of first step. And that was just, it was really helpful for me, because it was like, you know, list times that you've been in a blackout. And at first, like, the joke is like, I was in a blackout. Like, I don't remember. But then I got to think about it, and I remember all that, like, demoralizing behavior. I remember, for me, like, towards the end, like, finding fast food that I didn't remember buying, and, like, I realized that I'd driven in a blackout, and, like, more than once. And I can't understand the, like, mechanics of this. Like, I'm able to get in the car, go through a drive-thru, pay, order, like, all while in a blackout, go home, get back in my parking spot. Like, it's insane what we can do. And, like, I learned in rehab that a blackout is when your brain is basically like, I don't have enough power right now to for you to have all your functions. Like, all I can do right now is help you breathe, so I'm going to take away the part where you remember things. It's crazy what we do to our bodies, and, like, it's just crazy. But it's so nice to be able to, like, talk about this stuff today and to be removed from it, you know? Because in the past, like, I never wanted to bring up any of this. Like, I just wanted to shove it down and just have it all die with me. So it's just amazing to be so free, you know, to have gone through all the steps. I mean, doing all the stuff, like the inventories and stuff, isn't always fun, but it's like my sponsor always says, how free do you want to be, you know? And that's kind of what it was like for me with the financial amends. Like, I didn't want to do that, but she would just say, all right, how free do you want to be? And that's kind of how I try to live my program now. You know, this, like, the first year was, I don't want to say easy, it wasn't easy, but it's like you're just, like, physically trying to not pick up, and, like, that's, like, the goal. And, like, and it was really cool to kind of get the foundation of, like, getting a friend group and getting in service. But then the second year has been really weird so far, because you're dealing with all the emotional stuff, and then I started to feel like I don't really need meetings all the time, and, like, kind of going, like, every once in a while, or not everyone, like, I still have service commitments, but at this conference that I went to this last weekend, 2 weekends ago, it really reminded me that, like, I don't go to meetings just for me anymore. Like, it's about giving back to people, not just newcomers. Like, we can all be suffering, no matter how much time we have. Like, it's about being of service. And so even if I think, well, I don't need one, like, I'm not going to pick up, like, I still need to go and stay connected, because it isn't just about me, you know? And so that's really cool today. Like, you know, I'm, without this program, I'm a selfish person. I'm a dishonest, crazy person. But with this program, I've completely changed. I'm different. Yeah, so thank you.